then I would like to start by thanking the organizer for giving me the opportunity to speak at this interesting seminar, which is associated with the most noteworthy occasion and which is taking place in such a beautiful place. And let me say that I'm a little bit surprised that I'm the first person to speak about something which is so close to the hearts of many chemists and about which so many theoretical chemists like to argue. So here is your opportunity when I finish speaking or when I'm interrupted by the next heat protection failure in the projector, you can start arguing with me. So, chemists have been talking about aromaticity and, well, just about aromaticity for a number of years, probably since August Wilhelm Hoffmann mentioned the word for the first time in 1855. And some people might say that we could shift this historical moment even further back in history to 1825, when Michael Faraday discovered benzene. Well, I do not agree with this because he was slightly wrong in specifying the chemical formula of benzene. He thought it was C6H3. So this is what most theoretical chemists would associate with the concepts of aromaticity and anti-aromaticity. The Frost cycles, which are based on simple chemical theory, which indicate that benzene is aromatic and cyclobutadiene is anti-aromatic. And of course, the cyclobutadiene picture is a little bit wrong because it's suggesting that the ground state of square D4H symmetry cyclobutadiene is triplet, whereas we know that it's in fact singlet. So how does Weyl's bond theory explain aromaticity? Well, in most organic chemistry textbooks, you can see these resonance pictures, and they work pretty well in the case of benzene. And you would say, well, we can draw very much the same pictures in the case of cyclobutadiene, but it's anti-aromatic, so we can say that there is no obvious difference, and this simple classical Weyl's bond theory cannot be used to explain anti-aromaticity. Okay, I shall slightly rearrange my talk. I was thinking initially of talking first about various magnetic criteria for aromaticity, and then about the Weyl's bond picture. I prefer now to start with the Weyl's bond picture because we have some recent interesting results which probably will lay the grounds for the later work based on magnetic criteria. So one of the probably most convincing explanations of aromaticity is associated with the use of the so-called spin-coupled wave function, which was introduced by Gerard and Lipscomb in 68, and a little bit later on, Goddard and his co-worker Lendner introduced a very similar construction, which they called the full GDB wave function. So the wave function is deceptively simple in appearance. It consists of a product of non-orthogonal one-direction orbitals and a very general spin function, which can be expanded in terms of all spin eigenfunctions, which are allowed for a given combination of the number of directions n and the total spin s. And the orbitals are defined very much as molecular orbitals. And the fact that they are non-orthogonal and that one takes into account the full spin space makes the optimization of this wave function quite challenging, but it's very much a solved problem. So, by definition, this is very much molecular orbital wave function. So why should it be called a Weyl's bond wave function? Well, this falls from a simple interpretation of the spin-coupled wave function. If we make some rather straightforward algebraic rearrangements of the definition, we obtain the wave function as a linear combination of VV star structures, which, if one makes the appropriate choice of these spin functions, and the appropriate choice is this Wheeler spin basis, are very similar to the resonance structures in classical Weyl's bond theory. So apart from that, we can use various other types of spin functions, and in fact, if we are using the Serber spin functions, which construct the many electron spin eigenfunctions from all two electron singlet and triplet spin functions, we obtain something which can be easily interpreted as the local spin about which Ishko Mar spoke yesterday. So let us here look at how spin couple theory explains the aromaticity of benzene. Well, if we optimize this wave function in which we keep all the sigma orbitals as WF5 co-orbitals and put just the pi orbitals in the active space, we obtain a picture of six equivalent distorted orbitals which very much resemble 2pz orbitals on the carbons. There are six orbitals of this type. And if we look at, the spin space expressed in the reverse spin basis, we can see the interaction of two dominating cationae structures and three less important dual structures. So the percentage with which these two cationae structures are present in the wave function is about 41%, and the dual structures have a weight of about 6%. So if we try to approximate the spin couple description of benzene by a very simple wave function, we can do it reasonably well just by taking a linear combination of the two cationic structures. And that's for the ground state. One interesting result of a very detailed spin couple valence bond calculation of the excited states of benzene, which was published in 1994, was that the first single excited state of benzene can be approximated again very well by something very simple involving the two cationic structures, but with a negative sign between them. So we could say that these two cationic structures are in resonance, but these two are in anti-resonance. And we shall see that this has important implications about the aromatic properties of the first single excited state of benzene. So let us see what spin couple theory does about anti-aromatic systems. This is the classical example, square cyclotodiene of D4H symmetry. And early spin couple work was suggesting that the aromaticity of this system could be explained by the fact that the spin coupled orbitals form two antipairs. So each antipair consists of two orbitals of this shape. There is a second one across the other diagonal. And the spins of the orbitals inside the region of these antipairs are coupled exactly to triplets. And the two triplets are then coupled to form an overall singlet. And this triplet coupling, which is very much local spin across the diagonal, was associated with the radical character of cyclotodiene and its instability. So this picture is quite convincing, but unfortunately it doesn't tell the whole story. So a couple of years ago, we managed to discover that antipairs can be observed not just in the spin coupled wave functions for anti-aromatic systems, but we could also obtain a solution for benzene, the classical example of an aromatic system which was involving antipairs. So these two orbitals are antipairs in benzene. So again, the whole pi space, pi active space, involves six orbitals. They're separated in three groups in which the orbitals are symmetry unique. And we have 20 pairs, this one here, and a very similar, identical one, in fact, in appearance across these two carbons. And this was a demonstration that antipairs are not, in fact, a true sign of anti-aromaticity. In fact, the explanation that what we observe is antipairs both in cyclotodiene and benzene is that the spin-coupled wave function in these systems is very close to Liouville's spin-projected Hartree-Fock wave function, so almost identical. And these antipairs are, in fact, the orbitals one would obtain if one were to carry out a spin-projected Hartree-Fock calculation on any of these systems. And of course, we have observed antipairs in other systems which are considered to be aromatic. This is, for example, the transition state of the 1,5 hydrogen shift in Z1,3 pentadiene. And as you can see, we have a sigma antipair and a pi antipair. So the antipairs are not a true sign of anti-aromaticity. How can we describe anti-aromaticity then in valence bond theory? Well, there is again another paper dealing with cyclooctatetraene in its idealized DAH symmetry. And for this system, we discovered that the spin coupled wave function was exhibiting asymmetric equivalent orbitals, and the spin space was dominated by these two capillary structures with very small contributions from these additional valence bond structures. And we observed that we could approximate very well the ground state wave function by the difference of these two capillary structures. So this is a typical enteromagnetic system, and the way to show it, to show its simplicity, is to assume that the two capillary structures are in anti-resonance. This is in fact not a very good explanation, and the reason why it's not very good is that we are not able to say that anti-aromaticity should be destabilizing the electronic system of the anti-aromatic system on the basis of this anti-resonance. But this is in fact the best probably description that we have at the moment. So if we compare this approximate but still very good spin coupled wave function for the ground state of a typical anti-aromatic system to the spin coupled approximate wave functions for the ground state and the first single excited state of benzene, we can spot that in fact we have every reason to expect that there will be some similarity between the first single excited state of benzene and the ground state of cyclohexane. So we might expect that this single excited state of benzene could be in fact anti-aromatic. So just to mention some new spin coupled results which we have just obtained. We have been for a very long time trying to obtain spin coupled theory to provide convincing explanations of the aromaticities of various charged cyclic systems. And of course, classical valence bond theory, we have no problems explaining the anti-aromaticity of a cyclopentadienyl anion by looking at these five resonance structures. Well, for the original definition of spin coupled theory, this is a much more difficult problem, because we would need to place six vectors in six orbitals, and if we were to do a spin coupled calculation, we'd be getting a picture of this type. So these cartoons here show the positions of the six orbitals. There would be two orbitals responsible, say, for the two pi bonds in this structure, and two additional orbitals describing this one pair. And if we want to recover the full symmetry of the system, we would need to perform a spatial symmetry projection and obtain a wave function which would be very much the analog of a 6E30 plus CF wave function, which again is not very convincing. So very recently, we thought that we should improve a little bit on traditional spin coupled approach and allow doubly occupied orbitals consistent with the lowest ionicity observed in the system we want to describe. So how would we describe then this cyclopentadienyl anion? Well, we would be using orbital products corresponding to all these resonance structures, and the wave function takes very much this form. As you can see, the number of orbitals that's used in this wave function is 5, and you would be expecting to see the analog of a 6E5 plus CF wave function. And the optimization of the orbitals does indeed provide a picture which is very similar to that of benzene. This is one of the five symmetric equivalent orbitals in this system. It is very similar to the corresponding orbital in benzene. And the coefficients with which the various structures are present in this wave function are again very reasonable. These dominant structures and these are the structures which have very low weights. So we carried out these calculations with a very flexible new valence bond code V2000 developed by Giaboli, Brans, Alterduke, and Roy McQueen. And in probably a couple of months' time, we'll have similar descriptions of a number of other aromatic cations and anti-aromatic cations and anions. So how would we try to describe then the aromatic properties of different electronic states in various systems? One way would be to carry on with spin couple theory and try to see if the spin couple wave functions, precise states, could be interpreted in terms of a very small number of structures. This would be very time consuming, so somewhat more expedient approach would be to try and use various magnetic criteria. And amongst these, of course, one could look at Schwyer's nuclear-independent chemical shifts, at proton shieldings, and magnetic susceptibilities, and so forth. And one actually important moment here is that if one wants all these quantities to convey reliable information about the aromaticity or anti-aromaticity of a system, we will need to use wave function with sufficiently high quality, say Bessier, or properly construct multi-configurational self-consistent field wave functions. So if we are using these magnetic properties, and if we are in position to calculate good approximations to various electronic states, we can in fact talk about the aromaticity and the aromaticity and anti-aromaticity, not just of the ground state, but also of various excited states of your system. And in fact, the first time these ideas that one could talk about aromaticities of various electronic states appeared was in a paper by Babb, who in fact introduced the idea of the so-called triplet aromaticity and anti-aromaticity, according to which Huckel's 4n plus 2n 4n rules for ground state aromaticities should be reversed in the lowest triplet states of the corresponding aromatic or anti-aromatic systems. And of course, this idea of triplet anti-aromaticity has been exploited in a great detail by Schwyer and his co-workers, and they have been able to notice examples of triplet anti-aromaticity in various molecules. Then the question is, if it is possible to talk about triplet anti-aromaticity, is it possible to talk about general excited state aromaticity and anti-aromaticity? And I believe that I can show you some results which show that this is indeed the case. So the calculations that we will present it here include calculations on benzene, cyclooctatetraene, and cyclooctatetraene. And in the case of benzene and cyclooctatetraene, the states that were looked at were the ground state, the lowest triplet state, and the first singlet excited state in the case of benzene, and very much the same sequence of states in the case of cyclooctatetraene. For cyclooctatetraene, it was also interesting to look at various geometries, because the idea was the 8H symmetry geometry should be anti-aromatic, so we also look at the bond alternating D4H geometry and at the two bowl-shaped geometry of D2D symmetry. And for cyclooctatetraene, we looked at some additional states. We included also the second symmetric excited state in the idealized square geometry and in the bond alternating geometry of D4H symmetry. And, well, we used a sufficiently large basis set, and the Cassier calculations were based on gauge including atomic orbitals that were carried out in Dalton. And we also carried out some UHF, Hartree-Fock, and MP2 calculations with Gaussian. So here are some of the results about the nucleus-independent chemical shifts. And of course, Schwyer has proposed a very large variety of these nucleus-independent chemical shifts. The one that were looked at in this case were Nix 0, which is, in fact, the isotropic shielding type of the negative sign and calculated in the center of the ring. Nix 1, very much the same thing, but calculated 1 angstrom above the center of the ring. Nix 0, ZZ, well, that's the ZZ component of the shielding tensor with an inverse sign calculated in the center of the ring. And Nix 1, ZZ, which is the Z component again, ZZ component of the shielding tensor with an inverse sign and calculated 1 angstrom above the center of the ring. And as expected, well, the ground state of benzene is decidedly aromatic, which is indicated by this negative Nix values. Let's see what happens in the lowest triplet state. Decidedly anti-aromatic, positive Nix values. And in the lowest singlet state, the first singlet excited state, again, positive mixed values over, which should be considered as an indication that we are indeed dealing with an anti-aromatic system. Let us see what happens with square cyclobutadiene. Decidedly, as expected, non-aromatic, anti-aromatic in the ground state. And in fact, this is the first time that mixed values are reported for the ground state of square cyclobutadiene. If one doesn't use a CASCF or multi-configuration of self-consistent field wave function, it is not possible to describe this ground state properly without attributing the symmetry of the wave function. And I guess that Christel van Vuren and Werner Kutzelnik could have calculated this mixed values with their multi-configuration of IGU approach if they wanted to a long time ago. It's also curious to see what are the differences between the different approaches when you start calculating the various mixed values for the lowest triplet state of cyclobutadiene. Well, UHF and CASCF are not that far apart. And of course, if you want to look at higher singletic side states, the first singletic side state, the second singletic side state for square geometry, we can see that both of these states, well, the first of these states is characterized by a pair of positive mixed values, but the mixed values which are considered to be more reliable, that is, the ones that correspond to the ZZ components of the shielding tensor, are both negative. So there is a chance that we could say that this first excited state is slightly aromatic, whereas this one is probably anti-aromatic, or we might also say that this is a non-aromatic state, because when we go to higher excited states, all these concepts of aromaticity and anti-aromaticity begin to become way more vague, and one could generally expect that all anti-aromaticity indices will be showing that the states will be anti-aromatic because they are unstable as excited states. So here are some results again about rectangular D2H symmetry cyclobutadiene, and the interesting thing is the large disparity between the CASCF Hartree-Fock and Tempi 2 values for the Nix indices in the ground state, which is an indication that if one is using just Hartree-Fock or any type of co-shear wave function for calculation of the nucleus-independent chemical shieldings, the results will be, in fact, quite far away from the more accurate multi-configuration results. So here, the results are augmented with the results for cyclo-tetraene, and the most eagle-eyed amongst you will spot that there are small differences in the results of benzene and cyclobutadiene from the previous slide. And this is because when we were looking at cyclobutadiene and benzene, we had the chance to use either experimental or very high quality geometries calculated by other authors. And in this case, when we started looking at cyclo-tetraene, we in fact couldn't find proper geometries, say, for the D8H symmetry, and we had to optimize the geometries using CASCF wave functions, and for consistency, we re-optimized also the geometries for benzene and cyclobutadiene using CASCF wave functions. Again, the trends are very much the same as in the case of the previous systems. The interesting condition is cyclo-tetraene, and one can see that the 8-in-8 CASCF Nix values indicate that the idealized D8H geometry, sorry, this one, is decidedly anti-aromatic. And if we switch to the first triplet state, we have already signs of aromaticity, and the first singlet excited state appears to be just as aromatic as the ground state of benzene. If you compare this rows of mixed indices, you'll notice they're very much the same. And very much the same picture is produced if you look at this, I apologize, very cumbersome tables of various magnetic properties. In fact, the only property that doesn't actually carry much information about chromaticity is the isotropic shielding for the carbons. But you can discover the separation between aromatic and anti-aromatic states in all of the other properties listed in this table. And of course there is another table of this type which shows everything including cyclooctatrine. I'm not going to discuss its details. So let us have a look at the summary of these results about aromaticity and anti-aromaticity. On the basis of this nucleus-independent chemical shifts, various proton shieldings and magnetic stabilities, we can conclude that if we are looking at benzene, the ground state is indeed aromatic, but the first triplet state and the first singletic site state are anti-aromatic. If we look at different cyclobutadiene, the archetypal example of an anti-aromatic system, the ground state is anti-aromatic, the first triplet and the first singlet states are slightly aromatic, and the second singlet excited state is either anti-aromatic or non-aromatic. And very much the same change of aromaticity and anti-aromaticity is also observed for cyclooctatrine. So all these results are showing that upon transition between the ground state and the lowest excited states of aromatic and anti-aromatic systems, there is indeed an inversion in the relative aromaticity or anti-aromaticity. And in fact, this could be associated nicely with the Woodward-Hawking rules, the most common Woodward-Hawking rules, which state that receptive reactions which involve 4M positive electrons are thermally allowed and photochemically forbidden. And well, they should be thermally allowed because they're passing through aromatic transition states. And they should be also photochemically allowed because then, in this case, sorry, they should be photochemically forbidden because they will be passing through anti-aromatic transition states. And on the other hand, if we look at the foreign the precise reactions involving foreign reactions, which should be thermally forbidden and photochemically allowed, once again, if we look at the results for cyclobutadiene and cyclooctatrine, we see that they will be passing through anti-aromatic transition states. In the ground state, they should be indeed forbidden, whereas if we look at the first excited state, they should be passing through aromatic transition states and they should be allowed. So that's everything. Thank you very much for your attention.
Now it's time for discussion. We have time for one question.
The mix, I'm not sure whether when we did our calculation, mix was already on the market.
Oh, that's true.
But we have evaluated the sustainability and isotopy, and these things were perfectly done at that time. I want to point out the detail that cyclobutadiene as well as cyclooctatetraene don't obey the Hund's rule. So to say, I mean, for the most symmetric structure, the triplet is not the ground state.
That's true, yeah? Yes.
I mean, does this affect your results?
No, because they were obtained with Cassiel wave functions, and as a rule, we obtained the ground state similar for both cases.
It's worth mentioning.
Yes, and in principle, if you look, in fact, at these results for cyclobutadiene, it's D4H geometry, and at this D2A geometry, they are very similar to your results with Van Buren. And the difference is probably 1 to 2 ppm because of the difference in the basis that's used.
Okay, I have two questions. So when I think of the cyclobutadiene anion, which at some point you had somewhere in the beginning in your slides, could you comment on the following? It always worries me a bit that valence bond theory can only give you an answer depending on what you put in it from the very start. And if you look at the number of Rummer diagrams that you can make for this case, could you comment on the influence on what you put in to the calculations on the outcome. Because you went somewhere from, I think, six coupling schemes of five to then quite a lot more, where you have this kind of, well, let's say, meta bonds.
This wave function does look a little bit handmade, but it's not. In fact, this is the simplest way in which I, the moment, can write a wave function of this type in which one of the orbitals shall be occupied. Yes. In fact, if you take this wave function ansatz, it's completely general, because you have one W occupied orbital and you allow the two possible spin couplings for the remaining four orbitals. And if you put, in fact, in these orbitals an arbitrary initial guess, they will converge to this result. So the design of the wave function is just a generative campaign. The only restriction is that we say, well, we'll have one orbital W occupied. And it can be any orbital, so we have to take into account all five possibilities.
Okay. And the second question is, when you have the table with the mixed values, so as far as I know, aromaticity is not indicated so much by the mixed values, but by the ring currents. Okay, ring currents that can be integrated using the law of Bayer and Savart to get you to the mix. Do you have a reason to believe that in an excited state you cannot say that the mix, which is the integral of something based on an ring current, can be mentally decomposed again to that it's always, an expression of a ring current and not of a bunch of local currents?
Well, as many other people, I also have my doubts about the mixes from this indices. But I have not just mix values. I have calculated a number of other related properties, and they all show the same picture. And so far as zinc currents are concerned, well, I would be happy if anyone would show me how to calculate them for classical body functions. I have passed picture Patrick Power over and over again how to calculate these zinc currents with Cassiopeia functions, and I still don't have an answer. And in fact, one of the systems that we calculated was in fact something that he very much wanted to calculate. Let's see what it was. Okay, so you see in the case of DHH symmetry, cyclohexane, this strange settled state. So Sunchini and Power wrote a couple of years ago a paper in which they were stating that this would be an aromatic system. And I had to calculate it and try and see if it's indeed aromatic. So the first difficulty was when I tried to optimize the DHH symmetry geometry of the receptor state using the Kassieff engineered wave function. This results in a saddle point on the potential energy hypersurface which has 40 negative 5 million layers. So this is something which does not exist, has never existed, and will never exist, and is of no interest to anyone. In any case, if you look at the Nix values, let's see where they are. They should be somewhere around. It's a little bit early, I guess. Okay. They indicate probably, well, with a pinch of salt you might take it, very slight aromaticity.
There are different definitions and understanding of aromaticity. For me, aromaticity mainly means that closing the ring causes energetic favor in the localization. What could you tell me something? For you to tell me that the cyclobutadiene in the first excited triplet is aromatic. And for benzene, anti-aromatic. Is it best sense that of the localization energy being changing at the time, or it is only for magnetic properties?
Well, it's not just for magnetic properties. I believe that if one calculates in some clever way resonance energies, they will also indicate stabilization. But there are also other, in fact, pieces of evidence in favor of the fact that this low excited states are correspondingly anti-aromatic or aromatic. There are, in fact, many calculations which show either planar geometries with bond equalization or planar geometries with bond alternation, which are the signs normally of aromatic and anti-aromatic systems. So there is indirect evidence which points also that this is the case.
Okay, so let's end with the